You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
TMZ, oh my goodness.
I mean, what are we doing here?
I think he's the philosopher of football.
It's great that everyone can give their opinion.
Absolutely ridiculous.
Find me. Find me. I don't care anymore. So drain my bank account.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
From New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental from the AT&T MLS studios in Midtown Manhattan. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Susanna Collins, Dave Goss, Twinsies!
I don't even know which one I am.
We're totally...
I look at the camera and I literally can't tell which one I am.
No, who's
I,
who?
Yeah.
Impossible.
Am I on the right or the left?
There's literally no like characteristics that would set either of you two apart. If you're watching on YouTube, good for you, because you can now see that both of these folks got the Pride jerseys that I don't yet have. One from Kansas City, one from Kansas City. I heard mine's in the mail, so I feel good about it. These are beautiful, by the
They're
way.
Awesome.
And Kansas City did a great job of putting theirs out first so that everybody thought that they were the ones that did it, but everybody's going to eventually get these, so go pick them up.
So I'm going to have to pick up. Like 20 more.
Yeah, obviously. Exactly. And you're now a big fan of Kansas City.
We look good.
Yeah, we look great.
We have a great show.
I don't even know which one's me.
MLS Midweek, U.S. Open Cup. Craig Weibel from Real Salt Lake will drop by. He will be in the AT&T MLS studios with us. We're talking Leagues Cup. I know the cynics out there, some of you got a problem with this, but you have some fair points. There's also some points that I will bring to the table and see if we can turn you around at all on that. And then we'll do the mailbag, ideally with Craig, because he's one of the best personalities in Major League Soccer. But the big news today, Dave, you walked in and said, I have a way for you to get Mindy, my fiance, who is pretty anti-Kansas, I gotta say, to move to Kansas City someday. How am I gonna do it?
So I don't know that I said the move part.
Oh,
he's already backpacking.
I said not hate, for starters, but we stayed in a great hotel downtown, and I went to two of the best bakeries I've ever been to in my entire life. One of them made breads, and they are the best breads you've ever had, and you get, like, for $8, you get two slices of all four of them.
Welcome to the Midwest.
And I could just... No, but you don't understand.
You're welcome to the Midwest.
This is like
I went to a bakery and there was bread.
Like, it's great enough.
But this is like class. I mean, this is next level stuff. And I went to Australian bakery. We got great like old school hamburgers at Topic over town.
Town Topic, bro.
That place is an experience. Mm-hmm. We went to the Rieger. That's a quality meal.
Sold on Kansas City. So sold that you're rocking the gear.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I'm all in.
Obviously, I'm sold
the
on
game day experience.
The Twin Cities here with the talisman.
Yeah. The game day experience at KC is
awesome.
Like equal with every team in MLS. It's awesome. Yeah. So it's worth it.
We're going to talk about game day experiences, by the way, because Providence Park reopens this weekend after 12 games, millions of dollars in renovations. The Timbers are back at home, and they're feeling pretty good about it. That one's on Saturday night on ESPN2. Let's jump right in, though, to the news of the week. And right now, in actually a couple minutes, the U.S. kickoff against Qatar, the U-20s in the World Cup. We won't get to talk about that, obviously. The assumption right now is that they will get through to the knockout rounds. They just got to get a draw, I believe. Before we jump into MLS midweek, before we jump into the Union, choking 2 points away, Robin Fraser maybe going to coach the Rapids, D.C. Chicago going midweek MLS crazy. What should people know about the U-20s, Dave?
That they're fun. Whether they win the tournament or not, whether all of these players matriculate to be full national team players or not, there's a lot of talent, there's a lot of reasons to watch, but the number one is they dominate possession, they're creative, they find different ways to use the ball that we just haven't seen a lot of U.S. teams do at this high of an international level. So they're worth watching purely for entertainment. I can't do that because I'm invested and it kills me and all those things, but they're really fun to watch.
Sebastian Soto got a couple goals to knock off Nigeria. A massive result after that loss to Ukraine for Tab Ramos in the U-20s. He was in the RSL Academy. We will ask Craig Weibel about that in just a little bit. Okay, jump into it. Midweek, the Union, darlings of Extra Time Radio, darlings of the Eastern Conference, right now didn't have the best three-game run. A bunch of those games at home. And by a bunch, I mean all three: Seattle, Portland, and now Colorado. Two draws and a loss. They drew to the Rapids. Disappointing. Alejandro Bedoya was so disappointed that he said, "The finishing is pissing me off right now. We're not getting it done." Shots on shots on shots. We had a bunch of email about this, yep. I believe, Dave. What are people saying after the Union drew 1-1?
People want to know kind of what you want to know, which is, are you worried? So we got a, so what's up with the Union? 2 points from three straight home games. The most disappointing thing is they outplayed their opponents in every game, but were sloppy and made mistakes or couldn't quite finish a game off. Should the panic bells be ringing, or do they just need to sort out some details? Another email coming in that literally just said, what's going wrong with the Union? 1 point where they probably should have had six at home.
They're one back of DC United in the East, Suze.
Yeah. I'm not panicking.
Not panicking.
No.
But certainly reason to be disappointed.
Yeah, for sure. But I mean, this has been, I don't think anybody's surprised that they don't have a striker. You know, I mean, like, there's not a guy that can consistently put the ball in the back of the net. So it's all well and good to create these opportunities, but unless you have somebody that can actually finish and score goals, it's not going to happen. And so I'm not necessarily surprised by this. I also think another reason I'm not panicking is because I look at the East. And it's just one of these years where it's just sort of up for grabs. They're 1 point behind DC in the standings right now. I think this is just it's kind of a little blip. I do think that they're one of the strongest teams in the East. I'm not necessarily concerned. It's just, a little mid-season dip. But they do need to find a goal scorer if they want to make their way up to the top.
Or do it by committee, I guess.
Yeah.
Which seems like the plan. And then Corey Burke can't come back to the U.S. right now for visa issues.
I think that hurt them, because if you're going to do by committee, you're saying we've got three or four guys that can get hot for three or four games at a time, and if we can rotate them correctly or use them against the proper opponents, we can get enough goals out of the position. Basically what RSL did last year with Luis Silva and Demir Krylov and all the pieces they moved in there. And Corey Burke was a part of that. So now you're missing either a third or a quarter technically of your one good striker. If you roll a guy out there with that one leg, you're probably not going to get as many goals. So it's an issue for them. And Susanna, as you said, if they want to go to a next level, they're going to need to spend money on a striker. That's just the reality of the sport in the world. You need to spend money at that position. If you choose not to, you can still win. You can win in MLS. You can win anywhere in the world. It gets harder. And if that's what they're going to do, you need to be so good in everything else you do. It's probably going to be hard for them in year one, I think, is what you're calling it, of this project. It's probably not, because a lot of pieces have been there. It's hard to say that they're going to win Supporters Shield and win MLS Cup in year one of a project where they're saying, we're going to play this style and win by committee. So the expectations for them this year shouldn't be to be up there, and that's why I mainly wouldn't worry about what's gone on so far.
Kasper Schabilko had some chances in this game. Did not finish him. Remember, this is a guy that didn't even really play for them last year after he arrived. He's had some good moments. Nobody expects him to be Joseph Martinez. Nobody does.
Yeah.
Sergio Santos got a goal in this game. Good for him. Well done. He hasn't yet produced at a level that you would say, okay, rely on that guy. Fafa Pico, Ilsinho, on and on and on down the list. Marco Fabian yet. It's all kind of guys that might, but you can't count on. And this is a tough three-game stretch for them. Comes back down to goals. They're still in second place in the East. I think they're going to be fine. The Rapids, though, three straight games with a result. Let's go, Rapids, man. Come on,
man.
I got in the habit of bagging on them for good reason. They were basically giving away games, just serving up goals to the other team. Philadelphia are like, where did that go? We needed that. We need goals on a platter. And now there's rumors out there from Jeff Carlisle of ESPN that Robin Fraser, currently an assistant coach at Toronto FC, could be the head coach for the Rapids. They're interested. They're pursuing him. We will see what happens. I feel this is the best possible scenario for the Colorado Rapids when it comes to a hire. Now, it's not done. We don't know if it will get done. Robin Fraser should have opportunities in this league based on his track record as an assistant, based on the fact that he was a trash fire at Chivas USA. He has connections.
He wasn't one. He was a part of it.
Right. Well, he was in the midst of one. Right. He was right in the middle of it, and he was the dog that was sipping the cup of coffee and just everything's not okay here, actually. He has a connection to Colorado. He played 5 years with the Foxes in the old APSL, which, if you're not a listener to Extra Time, you may not
Unreal
know about.
Interview.
But if you are a listener on Extra Time, you know from MLS Storytime, 2 years ago?
I think the one combine
year ago?
Before this one.
Yeah, 2 years ago at the combine, he told us that story. If you're a Rapids fan, you have to be desperate.
He also played for the Rapids, by the way.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's the old school connection back. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I agree with you. I think for them, best case scenario, they want a guy who knows the league, Obviously, Robin Frazier does that. They want a guy who's been a part of success in this league. Check. And they want a guy who can develop or will work with their young players, who won't just come in and say, well, I need quality. I need slots on. I need high-priced defenders. And I think Robin Frazier's fits all of those. He's also probably overqualified. He also, I think, cares about the market and the sport in that area. For him, I don't know if it's the right move, because I think right now he is always one of the first three names mentioned to get the next job. And it's not going to happen in Toronto because Greg Vanney's there. And with Berhalter at the U.S. national team, I don't think Vanney's going anywhere anytime soon. So he will have to leave to get a head coaching job if that's what he desires, because that's not what everyone always wants. I don't know that this is the best option for him because of how unsure the group is. You don't know what the team's going to look like on the field. You don't know what the front office is going to look like at all times over the next few years. So you're not signing up for a sure thing. Even if your job is guaranteed, it's not guaranteed what's going on around you. It could be difficult. And I think Robin Frazier as a profile is attractive to maybe better jobs out there, but it's Major League Soccer. If you come in with a plan and a system and you believe in what you're doing, you can turn things around.
But it's an opportunity. It's an opportunity, you know, a chance to kind of take this team that was in the absolute gutter, in dire straits, and you get a chance to make your mark, to change the culture, to be the guy that turns it around. And I think a lot of guys who are in that position where they're being talked about for head coaching jobs look at that situation and that scenario and say, I want to be that guy. I want to make my mark. I'm gonna be the one to do this thing and turn it around. And so in that way, I think it can be a really appealing situation. You know, it's not like this huge market team, but if you're the guy that can get it done and change that culture there, then, you know, it's a win for you. It's a huge, huge win.
I know that Anthony Hudson didn't last long, but maybe there's a little bit less pressure in Colorado to get it done immediately
100%.
The idea that, hey, we are going to build through the academy. We are going to be smart about their signings. Oh, by the way, we also, speaking of opportunity, have open DP slots coming up. You can be a part of deciding who gets those spots, of what fits best within your team. And if he's hired, whoever is hired, Porg Smith, this organization, has to put trust in them. Has to. You can't hold them at arm's length at this point. You're in desperate straits. You have to have somebody that you, one, trust and will put some power in their hands to say, shape this the way that you need it to be shaped.
Didn't they put a power in Anthony Hudson's hands?
For sure, and
didn't
it didn't work.
Let him make
signings? But that was a wrong decision on who you hired.
Maybe.
So you have to hire the right person.
Yeah.
I think Robin would be that guy. We will see if the Rapids could get it done. This could be a sort of club-changing hire.
It
could be a great opportunity.
I also love the fact that he's been working under Greg Vanney for the last 4 years, who, in my opinion, is one of the best head coaches in the league. So I feel like that he's ready. I think he's kind of ready to step out and take it on his own.
We will see. The other thing about Robin, he has experience on all these fronts. You know, they're starting to bring through the youth side with Toronto. They were starting that in New York when he was there. He's won supporters' shields. He's won MLS Cups. He's worked with Josie and Michael and Jovinko and now Pozuelo. He knows how to manage big names as well as the guys that are kind of MLS lifers. So he should be able to, in theory at least, do all those things. We will see what happens with them. They will not be getting Zlatan with the Colorado Rapids. LA Galaxy have him. He's finally back. He helped them to a win in Kansas City, 2-0 for the Galaxy. Guillermo Barrichello said, it's back to defense we go, and, well, back to defense they've gone. Luckily, they got some difference makers. Fabio Alvarez got a goal in this one. He was their end-of-the-deadline signing on TAM. But Zlatan, after this game, said, criticism is everywhere. I like it. I eat it for breakfast and then for lunch. Who is criticizing Zlatan other than Bobby Warshaw? Like, I'm very curious. Who's actually criticizing this man?
I also like a little variance in my meals, by the way. I don't want to eat the same thing for
consistent. I love this quote so much because this is so quintessential Zlatan. Like, to your point, there really isn't a lot of people out there criticizing him. But, like, in his Zlatan mind trick, he's, like, making it up because it's what fuels him. He literally says it. I eat it for breakfast. I eat it for lunch. Like, he is sort of manifesting criticism to go out there so he can play with a chip on his shoulder, because he has straight up said that that's how he likes to play. He likes to play angry. And so I think for him, it's part of his whole strategy. You know,
he's good at the mind games on other people. Like, I could play mind games with you and, like, get you going. But Zlatan's like, actually, I'm going to play mind games with myself and get me going. And by the way, Zlatan, if you would like to come and confront your biggest critic here at Extra Time, If you want to come on this show, you are welcome. Come on this show. Take on Bobby Warshaw. Tell him why.
You're going to put Bobby out there?
We're going to
throw him under the bus.
No,
he's not even here.
This is so... I'm
throwing Bobby under the bus.
Give me my popcorn. Yeah. Like, just sitting
Bobby
here watching
Bobby V. Zlatan.
It.
You're not
just,
in for that?
You just eyed up the camera 1v1. You pointed at Zlatan and challenged him and then put someone else's name in the challenge. If you're going to step up, you got to go yourself, or you got to have Bobby do it himself.
Okay, Bobby.
I think Bobby would be up for it.
I think Bobby would definitely be up for
it. You got to let him
put your money where your mouth is, sir.
All right, Bobby. We'll be there. Good result for Zlatan in the Galaxy, though. Well done. Not a good result
also,
for him.
Also, they won this weekend when Zlatan didn't play.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
Yeah, no, for sure. He's not the only piece. But again, mind games. Zlatan, sure. The full circle mind game there. Not a good result for DC. Not a good result for Chicago. 3-3, crazy game on Wednesday night. Just... Chicago up. Then Ulysses Segura, of all people, scores two goals to even it up. Lucho gets the goal that you think's going to win it for DC. And then Francisco Calvo, give me some R-E-S-P-E-C-T, baby.
Of course.
Gets that game-tying goal. And we had some people email us just a tad too soon about the Fire. And what did they say?
George in Queens says, last week Bobby was saying how Chicago is the best team in the East. I think with an upgrade to striker, they are the best in the East. Also, David said their defense was not to be trusted. I think the exact opposite. I think with time to build cohesion, Kapelhoff, Schweinsteiger, and Calvo will be the best defense in their conference. Maybe Schweine can get Lewandowski to come over and join him, replacing Nikolic. They would be favorites to make it to MLS Cup then. So I think Bobby is right.
Mm.
I trust that defense. Mm. Three goals against DC, one called back, so technically four if I'm being friendly to myself on this conversation.
I mean, look, George in Queens, which, by the way, is a classic.
George
in Queens.
Yeah. Just,
it flows really,
strong.
Really
strong.
You think it might be fake?
Oh, I thought you were saying that was like a weeby one.
No, I'm much more creative. George in Queens is very straightforward, and I like it. Look, he's right about Chicago and the attack. They create the most big chances in the league outside LAFC.
Mm-hmm.
Did so in this game. Yeah, had almost like four expected goals.
Yeah. Crazy. Yeah.
But that back line is a big issue. And also the fact that they change the way they play every single game.
No, but the...
They switch it up.
Right. But I think part of that is because individually, 1v1 defensively, they're poor. You have players that are out of control. They don't shift the man they're defending the right way. I don't know that there's an understanding of who I'm passing off and where a guy should be. And so all of that causes chaos, and I think right now, not right now, because over the last like 3 years it's been this way, Pano's just trying to find something that works. Mm. And he keeps trying to roll something out that works. And unfortunately, one of the linchpins is probably Schweinsteiger, who's not going to be able to play on a Wednesday in between two weekend games, traveling and all those things consistently. And then throughout the year, he's probably not going to give you 28 to 30 games. So if that's your one linchpin that has to hold it all together, you could say, hey, we just want to make the playoffs. And from there, we think if we roll out our best 11, we can beat anyone in the East, which I don't think is totally wrong if they're on. But it's a dangerous way to go.
So I want to quiz you guys real quick. Chicago Fire have not won a game away from home this year. They're 0-4-3. Who are the other two teams in Major League Soccer that have not won an away game yet? There are only two other teams that haven't done it. This time I didn't put it in the rundown, so you couldn't cheat on it.
The Portland Timbers.
Nope.
Joke, because they haven't played a home game yet.
Yeah. Whoa.
Yeah, that was just you buying time, by the
way. San Jose?
Nope.
Yeah, because they won away.
Give me some rapid fire guessing here. I mean, don't be
well,
too...
Well, we could just name every team
in the league. Yeah, don't be too cute with these.
FC Dallas.
Nope.
Houston.
Nope.
Not many.
Philly.
Nope.
That would make no
sense. They're at the top of the East.
Orlando.
Nope. New England is one of them.
That made a lot of sense.
They're down at the bottom. The other one is Sporting Kansas City.
Oh, well.
Interesting.
No wins on the road for Sporting Kansas City.
Those are two of the worst teams.
Yeah,
in the
league. No happiness for either Velkoponovic or Ben Olsen. Split the points in D.C. Joseph Martinez got the points for Atlanta. A 3-0 win for them. Two of those goals in late. Oh, yeah, you're gonna imitate it?
Make sure
you got to be in the camera. Let the people on YouTube see it. Yeah. No?
You got to come here live if you want
to. Gotcha.
Don't drink your beer and complain about things.
Exactly.
Come here and respect me.
Respect me.
Speaking of, Joseph bags two goals against Minnesota. They win 3-0. They get another shutout. And he says, a coach once told me that people have short memory. Unfortunately, people have a short memory and they don't remember what you've given them. That happens everywhere. One always tries to give their best. Some people accept you and value you, and many people come to the stadium to drink beer and criticize the players. That's true, Joseph. That's true. This team, in 3 years, has given much more than any sport in the history of this city. Any of you guys tell me anyone who's had done it, it'd be unfair to criticize Atlanta United for a good game or a bad game or when someone scores or doesn't.
He probably wasn't wrong about the city thing. Because
No, he wasn't.
Won. Well, Atlanta.
Yeah, right. No one won championships.
He was like, I haven't seen any other parades in my entire time here.
That's true.
Everyone told me this was the first. Now, look, it's been a little bit of a couple months of gnashing of teeth, let's say, for Atlanta United.
Yeah.
But that's another shutout.
I mean, Brad Guzan gets lost in this conversation when we talk about Atlanta United, because I mean, where are they in the standings right now? I mean, it was bleak for a while.
Fourth.
So they're fourth, right?
They're actually only 4 points or 3 points out of DC. They have two games in hand on DC. They have two on Montreal, who are 1 point ahead, and one on Philly. So
right there, they win
the games in hand.
Right there. Brad Guzan has 7 shutouts on the season, made another ridiculous save.
I think 6 of the last 7.
Which is insane. And I think that, and admittedly, I am a person who was quite skeptical about his productivity when he came to the league, because I'd seen him play overseas and I was kind of like, I don't know about this guy, but he has been fantastic for them this season. And it just kind of, it speaks to the way Atlanta are playing right now. I mean, it is a completely different Atlanta team than the one that won Cup last year, where it was just goals.
I think they're one shutout away from tying last year's shutout mark. And that was with like the second best record in league history.
Which is crazy. So I think that, you know, as they kind of have to rebuild this team and sort of reform an identity, Brad Guzan has been at the center of that. And I think we should give him some credit for what he has done.
Joseph Martinez now has 8 goals in 14 games, which is a really good return, but not quite the goal a game return that he had prior to that. The man chasing him, or I should say chasing his all-time goal-scoring record of 31 goals, is Carlos Vela. And this is the time where I start to look at the stats, and I see 15 goals in 15 games for Carlos Vela, and I say, he leads MLS in big chances created. He leads MLS in big chances. He leads MLS. LAFC leads MLS in big chances created. They're second in big chances missed, so there is some room to improve there. And he leads MLS in big chances scored and shots, all that. All of which to say is, will Joseph Martinez hold this goal-scoring record for more than one season? Is it plausible, is it likely even, that Carlos Vela will take over that spot immediately after Joseph took it away from the likes of Wando and Lassiter and everyone else? Is this going to happen?
No.
You're very confident about that.
Simple answer. Well, you asked a lot of questions. They were all yes or no questions, but some were created in different colors of gray. So the simple answer is no. Is it plausible that Vela could break it? Yes, because he is that good. And right now, the rate he's on. Do I think he will sustain it through the year? No. And the reason I think it's a little different is because Joseph did less. Joseph was an in-the-box finisher, and he played on a team that created a ton of chances for him, and he had the ability to finish them. I think what Carlos Vela is doing is less sustainable just from a pure energy point of view, and I think at some point LAFC is going to have to manage, okay, we need him to peak in the playoffs, not right now, because what Vela does, he covers more ground, he does more for his teammates, he does more defensively, and it's a harder job for him over the course of the season.
Yes or no?
I agree with what Goss is saying. I mean, but I'm just looking at his stats from last year. He had 14 goals last year. 15. And he's not going to play in the Gold Cup. I mean, like, they're going to have him around. And so I understand what Goss is saying. And I think that, you know, in the same way that Martinez benefited from a guy like Almiron up there feeding him. I mean, there are guys around Vela that are putting him in this position. So it is all contingent upon these dudes being around as well, staying healthy, which are all big question marks. I mean, you can look at it right now and be like, yeah, I mean, he's crushing it. He's got 15 goals. It's insane.
The crazy thing, he's on pace for 34 goals.
Right.
Which then you look back at Joseph's season last year, and again, it blows your mind that he got 31. You basically have to score a goal every single game. Here's how it happens. You mentioned those dudes that are supporting him. Marc-Anthony Kay, Eduard Atuesta, Latif Blessing, they stay healthy, the press stays effective, and those sort of like win the ball, quick transition opportunity into Carlos Vela's feet, 1v1 goals, those keep happening. If those keep happening, I think Carlos Vela has a chance. He's taken 80 shots this year. That's how much they're feeding him. You talk about Joseph being fed.
Yeah.
80 shots this year.
But a lot of that he creates himself, and a lot of them are shots from outside the box. A lot of those shots are blocked as well, which not saying that like they
20
have to be blocked.
20 have been blocked.
But
so
the
far.
Point is, he's ripping. He's Giovinco status right now, which is awesome because it's what they want. Their team feeds around what Vela does, and him shooting draws defenders and creates opportunities. That's why he has 9 assists. That's why he's creating so many chances. Nothing about what he's doing is negative. The question is if he'll score 31 goals this year. That's the question you're asking.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying I think that he won't be able to either sustain this, or at some point they're going to look at the miles he covers and the amount of work he's doing, and I think a more condensed schedule, the way that it's lined up this year, and say we need to manage him. And I don't know how Bob Bradley – my assumption is Bob Bradley goes into a room with Carlos Vela where there's the goal-scoring record on the line, but he thinks he needs to take a rest so that they can win MLS Cup, and he says to him, you're our Messi, we need you to win. Right? What matters? Individual awards or winning? Because he's going to win MVP probably if he's close anyway. So it's not about the MVP. It's just about that goal scoring record. And I think that they'll manage him to make him peak in the playoffs.
And to your point, everything we know about Vela as a player and a person, he is team guy 100% like all the way. So, you know, if it means resting, I think he would be, if that's better for the team, sure.
I wanted to go the opposite direction you both went when you said no. I wanted to say yes, but you've sold me right there. You've sold me on the 1v1 meeting with Bob Bradley where they say, what really matters to us? What really matters to LAFC? And it's not the 31 goals. It's MLS Cup. They saw what happened against RSL last year. Don't want that to happen again. History, the supporter shield, all that is well and good, as the Red Bulls will tell you. But you want to make history. You want MLS Cup. They want to be Atlanta United a year later, year two of expansion, getting the title. All right, let's talk Open Cup. That was going down as well. Thank God for ESPN Plus. Thank God that they are bringing David Goss and Bobby Warshaw and everybody Woo! Else down to Florida to call these games. Round 3 is over. Round 4 is set. The draw was Thursday morning. MLS is entering, as I've said before, you heard me rant, one round too late. One round too late. Please change this for me. Some big results, though, in round 3. Orange County FC, the last true underdog. NPSL, baby. They went to Las Vegas, and they won 5-3 against Las Vegas Lights. Paul Caligiuri knocking off Eric Winalda. Two U.S. soccer legends. Winalda, we know, loves the Open Cup, so that one had to hurt for him. RIP, play the sad music for the Florida Soccer Soldiers. North Carolina FC knocking them off. And for Forward Madison, Open Cup is no longer Flamingo. St. Louis Athletic handled business in that one. What'd you see, Dave? And what should we look forward to in the fourth round?
So Orange County FC was awesome. I had a chance to talk with Paul on the phone for about an hour last week. And he picks up the phone. And we were organizing a time for the next day. And he was like, yeah, just real quick. Like, we're going to win the hearts and minds of America when we shock the world and knock off Eric Winalda's side. Okay, talk to you tomorrow. Bye. And I was like, yes. And then he gave me a speech about waking up and not having a coffee machine working, but still going to work anyway, and how they're going to grind and how they're going to do stuff. And then they came out and scored 5 goals. It was a grind, but it wasn't exactly how we thought it would go down. They got outplayed in the first 2 rounds they played, and they still won. And then they played better against a USL Championship side on the road that had been undefeated at home in Las Vegas. So it was a pretty cool story. They'll now play the LA Galaxy, so an all-LA affair. Everyone should go out and watch that game. There's a guy up top, Blake Frischknecht, for OCFC that makes zero sense sometimes the way he plays. It's like herky-jerky and slow, and he's tall and lanky and doesn't look fast but is fast and is super skilled, and everyone that's seen him play really enjoys watching him play. So I advise anyone in the area to go watch that game. North Carolina FC knocks off Florida Soccer Soldiers, which breaks my heart.
1-0 too. I was watching that game hoping the Soccer Soldiers would just, they'd find a way.
But
it wasn't to be.
But we also have to give a shout out to NCFC, because when we talk about play your kids in MLS, they're doing it in USL. They've got a great academy. DJ Taylor, who scored the goal, came through their academy, signed to their pros, 21-year-old fullback. They've got Josh Perez, of course, who's now with Celtic back on loan. So they're doing it the right way. Flamingos went down as well. Rain delay, which I think hurt them because they came out, they were basically 2 goals in 6 minutes. Just a pretty hard way to go and win on the road. Now St. Louis FC will host the Chicago Fire, and that's one of my upset watches for the fourth round, because the way St. Louis plays, the way you need to beat teams when you're the underdog is just be annoying to play against. You don't have to play great soccer. You have to be physical. You have to go in on challenges. You have to make it so that the team that's playing you, whether it's an amateur side against a USL side or USL side against MLS side, just goes – I really didn't want to be here today, and you're making me want to be here less. And so I think St. Louis has a little bit of that. The Pittsburgh Riverhounds have a little bit of that as well. They're playing against the Columbus Crew SC. So those are two that I would watch out for in the next round, and the other one is the Charleston Battery. They actually do play great soccer, and they're at home. I don't know how Frank DeBoer takes this tournament. I don't know how he handles it.
Playing Atlanta, by the way, which is interesting because they have a relationship. Had some loans between the two. Also, it's a great send-off for that stadium in Charleston.
Yeah.
Because this is the last year of Black Bod, or whatever they're calling it right now. I will always call it Black Bod.
For sure.
But this is the last year. So that's a really cool send-off for that one. Other good games, Seattle Sounders hosting the Portland Timbers. I know some fans of both those teams aren't so happy about another fourth-round matchup, but it's cool for the rest of us. I like San Jose, Sacramento Republic.
Although I wish that Bay game Area was Sacramento.
There. I know. Mm-hmm. I've said it in my rant. I want MLS teams to have to go on the road and see different venues as well. But go check it out. MLSsoccer.com, US Open Cup, all the coverage.
One more to throw in. We talked, I think, with all three of us about the Texas rivalry that's coming with Austin Bold in USL playing Houston. So first little taste of how the two cities see each other and an opportunity to play against each other.
Maybe Matthew McConaughey will make an appearance.
He was wearing the Austin FC shirt.
Oh yes, he was.
I'm pretty sure she's aware of that.
Yeah, he definitely was. Full on Austin, full on Texas Longhorns with that. That's a win for Austin FC, no doubt about it. Week 14, the weekend, all the games, the listings, the coverage, MLSsoccer.com. Big news for FC Cincinnati ahead of the weekend. Veteran Dutch soccer executive Gerard Nijkamp is the new general manager. You probably knew that. We've talked about it. FC Zwolle was where he was before in the Netherlands. He's 49. He spent the last 7 years as the technical director there, basically handling everything on the soccer side. Now he will do the same for FC Cincinnati. This is, I think, and we spoke to Jeff Birding maybe 2-3 weeks ago now after they let go of Alan Koch. This was probably coming. They needed to have a soccer expert handling the soccer side in this era of Major League Soccer, and they've done it. They made a mistake, I think.
I dare you to say the word soccer.
Soccer. They made a mistake, I think, starting out the way they did. Now they're trying to correct that mistake. There's a little bit of a mess to clean up, but this guy has the experience to come in and create a framework from top to bottom that hopefully alleviates some of their issues.
Yeah, I made fun of you, but the reality of it is they actually need to become a soccer organization. They don't have an academy. They were going to draft guys, which just isn't how Major League Soccer works. They didn't seem to have a great understanding of how to go out and get international players, convince them about the project that they wanted to build. They don't have a coherent style that they want to play, and you know, maybe that's not something you institute from the top down, but it's at least principles, right? That's what Ernst Tanner and Ernie Stewart did. That's what Ollie Curtis did when he originally got to the Red Bulls, is just this is an idea of how the game can be played, where we can bring players in to fit that framework. And the coach has his own tactics, but we're not just pulling players from across the world and hoping it all fits together. So right now they need a lot of that. And I think this is a good signing of a guy who also went to Qatar, I believe, and worked with a club there that was a new club. So similar to this situation as well, has seen it in the Netherlands where it's ingrained and it's so strong in just club identity and how you can develop players and how you can build a club from the bottom up, and then also doing it in the Middle East as well, similar to what he's going to have now.
And Zwolle's not exactly a power, so he will understand the sort of capology and budget issues that you might have. How do you compete above? Well, he has one big job. What is that big job he might have?
Hire a coach. Well, everything that Goss just said is completely true and valid, but that all starts with the guy that you hire to head the whole thing up, and the culture, the mentality, the players that you go after. It is all so indicative in who you select to be your head coach. And so he's going to be judged on this very, very hardly. And it starts here. It's the number one most important job he has right now. You have to get a guy in there that is going to establish the kind of culture that you want to have in your football club. And that is numero uno for this guy.
That is the marquee decision here that he's got to make off the top. He will join immediately, help kind of move things along. It's Wool, and then there's no like September arrival, as some people had said with that. We'll see what happens. We'll see where he goes. Obviously, his experience is outside of the U.S., TBD for FC Cincinnati's head coach.
But he does have Luke Sassano, who's been there, who knows the U.S. soccer landscape, who's going to do probably most of the scouting, recruiting work inside of Major League Soccer, in college soccer, in USL. So he has someone to lean on there who can bring some of that, but maybe doesn't have the ear of the ownership the same way that now Nijkamp will have.
Providence Park, it's back. We've missed it. We've missed Timber's Army in force. Awesome. It looks amazing. That new stadium, the new stand, I mean, it's just like it rises and hangs over the field. It's now basically closed in.
Yeah.
And that noise should stay in. Not that it was not.
It was noisy. Already
it was
loud.
I have it. Can I make it? Can I admit something that I've admitted before? I've never been.
I've only been one time.
And I begged to go to this game. I begged and begged and begged. Somehow my begging was forgotten. Props to Jillian Sakovitz for being there. She's going to kill it for coverage in us.
I know, but Weeby, I'm genuinely bummed for you because I know how badly you wanted to go. But I have been very, very lucky in that I've been to almost every single stadium, MLS stadium. There is nothing like Providence Park. And no, it is not like, you know, the new shiny ones. I mean, this new addition will obviously bring some of that. But there is just this sense of, I mean, everything is on top of you. And the noise and the Timbers Army. It is just, it's electric. Every single game is electric. And it is my favorite place to watch soccer in MLS.
I think
this is going to be even better.
Yeah, I think this is a great game to open it too. 10:30 p.m. Eastern, ESPN2. Guess who's coming to town? The best team in MLS, according to Matt Doyle, the best team potentially in MLS history. LAFC will be there. Carlos Vela will be there. Portland LAFC on Saturday at 10:30 p.m. Eastern. I will find a way. I'll make a guarantee that I will find a way to get there this year.
We'll get you there.
We'll figure it out. Atlanta, Chicago,
I'm not paying for that. That's on Susanna. Yeah. Susanna, I know we're wearing the same shirt, but that's on you.
You're not. Come on. Help me out.
Make it happen.
Atlanta, Chicago, Saturday.
GoFundMe to Portland.
Unimas and Twitter, 6 p.m. Eastern. I don't think we have to go GoFundMe. We just got to get Jason Seguini to like pay attention to my constant Slack messages about where I would like to go if possible. Real quick, Craig Weibel and Leagues Cup are on the other side here. ESPN Plus Game of the Week. What do you got, Susanna?
We've got Dallas against Seattle. And I like this. This is a nice little Western Conference matchup here. Dallas and Seattle, two teams that I certainly anticipated being sort of at the top of the standings, and Dallas has kind of been struggling a bit. I think they're winless in their last six games,
It's been a bit for them.
It's been a rough stretch.
Yeah,
so,
it has been six.
But and Seattle coming off that tough loss to Kansas City. I like this matchup a lot. I think it's going to be some fun soccer. Both teams with something to prove.
I'm hitting Friday night, Vancouver, Toronto.
It's an easy one.
A little Canada there. Yeah. Mark Dos Santos has got the Whitecaps rising a little bit. Toronto are iffy, but I believe Pozuelo is back and Josie seems to be back. So they go to Vancouver Friday, 10 p.m. Eastern, that TSN Friday night game, also on ESPN Plus here in the U.S. I just want to see how Vancouver matches that standard and where they get goals from. Can they get goals? I know where Toronto FC will get them. I also know that Toronto FC gave up a lot of good chances. So maybe this is an opportunity for the Caps to capitalize on some of those. You?
When you talk about goals and getting goals, we're talking about Philly. They head to Minnesota. Both teams sort of looking
for... You just said Minnesota.
Yeah, you went Minnesota.
Minnesota.
I'm a man of the people. I'm regional to every region.
That's great.
I fit all flavors. I'm a full time zone guy.
Goes to Kansas City, talks about bakeries, though.
Yeah.
Not sure that's...
Messenger Cafe, man. That is some bread.
Yeah.
They got a sesame bread.
You went to Oklahoma Joe's, too, and you didn't mention that.
Yeah, because it's like, that's like low class stuff.
Okay.
No, I'm just kidding. It was amazing.
Oh, my Lord.
Oddly, some of the best french fries I've ever had in my entire
really
life. Yeah, no one really mentions that.
Sell us on this Minnesota game. Sorry, my bad.
Just when Minnesota's played at home, they've been open games. And it's a Minnesota team that I thought played better than the result showed against Atlanta midweek. And then you have a Philadelphia team that needs goals but's playing decent soccer. So I think this could be high-scoring one, end-to-end stuff. So fun to watch, but also two teams that need a result right now kind of to reset themselves.
All right. Leagues Cup, if you haven't heard, it is coming in July. Eight teams, four from Major League Soccer, four from Liga MX, MLS representatives, Chicago Fire, LA Galaxy, Real Salt Lake, and the Houston Dynamo. On the Liga MX side, Cruz Azul, Club Tijuana, Club America, and Tigre, some of the biggest names south of the border. It is a single elimination tournament, so you've got quarterfinals, semis, up to the final. The final will be played in a neutral city, TBD. Some people out there saying, Sam Stachko among them, that it would be Las Vegas. That
Ooh.
Would be a lot of fun. Really,
hey.
Really cool. The cynics are out with their sharp knives on this one, and look, understandably so. RIP Superliga 2007 to 2010. We've kind of done this before, and it went away. I get it. I get what the cynics are saying here. You've got midweek games in, you know, tough parts of the schedule for these teams that they're going to have to balance. Wilmer Cabrera has already come out and said that basically the Toros, you know, Rio Grande Valley, the USL team, are going to be playing a lot of the minutes in this one against Club America. I get that. I understand. That's the way it works. Yeah, for sure. For sure. And look, it's tough because I think that there is a ton of potential in a tournament like this. I just think right now we have no idea what this is going to be like. Same as Campeones Cup. It could be really cool. There's a universe where, you know, teams take it seriously and it turns into almost like a U.S. Open Cup between MLS and Mexico. And you have aspects of the rivalry and you have teams qualifying and ideally getting a little allocation money for that, maybe a massive prize. And, you know, all expectations are this will grow in the future. So it will get bigger. The footprint will get bigger. If it could almost be like a late summer, like March Madness type of thing, where it's just like all these games mean so much. It's 90 crazy minutes. I'm not sure it will be like that.
Incentive.
But I hope.
You need incentive. It needs to matter. And that's where, you know, the questions lie right now, is that there has to be a reason for teams to go out and want to win this tournament. And so I think if we can figure out a way for this to really matter, for this to be a trophy that really is important, then great. I think it's awesome. I agree with you. There's a lot of benefit here, but it's so early. We need to find a way for teams to really get behind it
for
and
sure.
Want to play.
What's the motivation? Will coaches, will clubs, will players, will they say this matters to us? And so we'll play our stars, because you look at this, there could be a lot of stars. Could be the who's who of U.S., Canadian, and Mexican club soccer, the Gignacs of the world. Copa America stacked, obviously. Tijuana, Oscar Pereja, I'm glad he's in this. Cruz Azul, historically a massive club. Schweinsteiger, Zlatan, Elise, maybe. Manotas, maybe. We'll see what happens in the summer. Real Salt Lake has an ethos to them, and this is a tournament they could potentially take seriously, but it comes at a bad time.
Maybe. I mean, you could sell me on the idea of bringing Tigres in to play at Rio Tinto Stadium in a competitive game any time of the year. Like, I could be sold on that if it's done correctly and if everything comes together the right way. The reality of it is you're going to get 15,000 to 20,000 fans in a stadium, which is exciting. You're probably going to get fans that haven't come to MLS games before. And if you play well or you're entertaining, or maybe Dynamo fans, you know, see the Rio Grande Valley kids play and they're like, oh, these kids are fun. Maybe I'll go down there for a game, or maybe I'll follow these kids more. That there's potential in all of that for people to enjoy it. These are some of the best clubs in the world that you're bringing in to play in these things. And so I can see all of the quality on all those sides. Year one, I think it's going to be a little awkward just because you don't know how. I don't think anyone knows.
It's all to be determined.
Yeah, how they're going to handle it. But I think you look at a Galaxy team that knows what it means to promote yourself, promote yourself in Mexico and internationally. I think they're going to understand maybe what's at stake here for them, which is to put themselves on, you know, on Univision, on the conversations in Mexico and across the U.S. And I think you look at Houston and RSL in Chicago, and you probably get some fans in the stadium that haven't come to your stadium in a little while or have never been there. So the opportunity exists for all of them. That makes sense.
This was coming. There's no doubt about it. You've been paying attention to the partnership signed, the Campeones Cup. This was coming. We don't know how it's going to shake out. I think it has a lot of potential. TBD on what it'll actually look like in practice. We will see starting in July. Craig Weibel is in our green room somewhere. Let's take a break. Let's bring him in. We'll be right back. Oh, it is an honor and a pleasure. The general manager of Real Salt Lake, Craig Weibel, has...
Debatable.
Yeah, he's graced us with his presence. Craig, what's up? Thanks for dropping by.
No, thanks for having me.
I think we were like one of your first interviews when you got this job. Like in New York randomly, like the day after.
Well, there weren't a lot of interviews. It's not like announcing Craig Weibel as the technical director
and GM was
like
a good dig.
just blew the media market away. I mean,
whoa, Craig Weibel.
Yeah, I think I actually called you guys and can you interview?
I'm here.
Yeah.
Well, we're happy to have you. We're going to keep you around for the mailbag too. And we just got done talking about Leagues Cup. You're obviously in it. Tigres is coming to the Riot. Tell us what this means and tell us how much of your resources as a club on the playing side you can actually devote to it.
Well, it falls at an interesting time, right? I mean, you look at the schedule and it's like, you know, we've been playing Saturday, Saturday, Saturday. We have a, you know, a Wednesday game in Montreal, and then all of a sudden it's going to be like 48 games in 13 days. You know, it's a tough one, but that competition's important to us. You know, the Open Cup, this cup, the league, when you weigh it all out, you know, to be successful in each one is measured how. The Open Cup is measured if you win. Right? Is the League's Cup, as it defines itself, is it only measured if you win, or is it measured if we beat Tigres? Is that good enough? These are all the questions we have to ask ourselves, but falls at an interesting time. I mean, we're going to be challenged with the roster as is. It's sandwiched in between two Western Conference teams that we have to get results against in order to accomplish our end of year goal, which is make the playoffs and give ourselves a chance. So it's a tough timing for the tournament, but you know, we'll treat this one seriously.
You're above the line right now, sixth mm-hmm. place in the Western Conference. Yeah. You had the loss in Montreal, but you rotated three straight wins before that. That's good. State of RSL right now in your mind at this point in the season?
I think we're in a good spot. I mean, I'm not good at sugarcoating things. So to be fair, you know, LA and Seattle are spending enough and their designated players should carry them above us. That's the truth. And for us, it's to come in right there, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 is what's realistic. Now, would we argue if we crept up into third or second? No, we probably wouldn't argue with that and donate points back. I mean, we don't want to distribute those. But we're in a good spot. We're above the line. We're nearly halfway through the year. And that's where we need to be. You know, we have a lot of young guys. It's funny. I get confused because these guys have been around for so long and we've been signing them and signing them and signing them homegrown after homegrown and balancing out with veterans and bringing in guys like Demir and Nedum and Sam Johnson to balance out that leadership, that veteran leadership with these young homegrowns, plus our veterans, Kyle, Nick, Tony, still, you know, with us. And to be where we are is a great accomplishment right now. But that's not really the goal. The goal is to be there after 34 games, you know. And the one narrative that I dislike that you guys can continue to jab me on in time as I'm going to feed this to you is people like to talk about getting into the playoffs and how do you get in the playoffs. You get in the playoffs by getting enough points. That's how you get in. And at the end of last year, it was so frustrating for me and this young group of players who's growing up and these veterans that are willing to lead this young group as we really shape the motto and identity of our club, talk about how we backdoored our way into the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, it's only because this team lost. No, we didn't get an extra point because LA lost on the last day. So that's kind of the narrative and that's the identity that we're building, and our young guys are starting to really understand it. We've been in every road game this year. It's a huge accomplishment for the coaching staff and for this group. And even last night in Montreal, struggled a little bit early. You know, could have conceded. But Nick stands on his head for the first 10 minutes. Then we do well to get ourselves back in the game and concede a silly goal at the end of the first half, but in every game on the road, something we didn't say last year. So another huge milestone and step for our organization.
And talking about last year, you quote-unquote backed in, and people talk about that. You then went and beat LAFC.
I think it was you that said it.
Probably. You then went and beat LAFC, though. Yeah. Now this year, single elimination playoffs for a team, like you said, which is behind some other teams in spending. Does it change the way you think about what the potential of this team is because it's these one games knockout the way that the playoffs are now set up?
I think the knockout's interesting, but what people have to really take a look at is the home field advantage. I mean, the statistics are staggering when you look at results on the road. The one cool thing about playoffs is you can go to a shootout, you know, and you don't have to win necessarily. You can draw in advance anyway. But it changes the dynamic of the playoff, obviously. But yeah, one-offs are, I mean, that's why sports are played. Sports are played for those dramatic moments. You know, the reason you play games is because Toronto and Atlanta had to come to Real Salt Lake, and we played very, very well in both those games and beat them. And if anyone would have looked at the roster and said we were going to do that, I mean, I'm not sure if you guys predicted that, but, you know, that's why the game is played. And that's what single elimination playoffs is going to add is this electric moments where it's not 90 minutes until halftime, you know, and then wait a week until the second half. I think it's going to be awesome, and it's great for the playoffs for MLS.
It seems like you selectively remember things we say, but then don't remember things.
No, I remember all the nice things you said. I just don't bring them up now.
Usually it's the other way. Usually it's people remember only the negative and never the nice thing.
No, right? I mean, the best thing about sports, it's our job to invoke opinion. And if someone leaves our stadium after a game without an opinion, good, bad, the worst thing we could do is send a fan away indifferent. Mm. That doesn't give anything back to the sport and back to the fans. And that's our job. You know, from my job all the way through our coaching staff down to the players, is every fan needs to leave with an opinion. The only one that they can't leave with is indifference. Otherwise, it kills us.
And Craig, you talked about your job. We've had several conversations where I know you wear many hats in the role of GM.
One or two.
We've just seen Cincinnati name their new GM,
yes,
Jared Nykamp, as a grizzled veteran of this job. What advice would you have for him? What would you say to him?
Well, first and foremost, I want to welcome him with open arms. And I say that because I'm a Heracles fan, and he was doing an amazing job at Pegswold. And I know Pegswold didn't fall into the playoffs like we did this year over there at Heracles. Like,
what is happening?
We may have done quite well over there. But
are you done?
I'm so glad that he's over here now. You know, it adds a little bit of that flavor of how the Dutch system works. It'll add to our conversations as general managers, as technical directors, as chief soccer operators. Like, it's going to be great for our league. And a guy like that who's done very well at Pegswold, he's going to be an awesome addition to our league. I think, you know, there's a learning curve for everyone, players, management, everything. But, I mean, above most, I just like that he's not at Pegswold anymore.
Wait. Heracles. I've seen Heracles play in person.
Yeah.
By the way.
Yeah.
Are you
yeah.
very Dutch? Is that something
Feyenoord.
I should know?
No. Years ago, four and a half years ago, on one of my first trips over to Holland, Heracles was one of the very first stadiums that I visited. Yeah. And we were actually looking at the turf. We were studying the turf for our training facility in Harriman. And that's the turf we actually ended up going with. But as we entered the stadium, their president was there. And we got in a conversation, and we learned so much from that conversation, just spur of the moment, and so many things about the league and the economics and the players and the mindset and the culture, that it was my first experience over there. I've had many more now, and I've been to many more stadiums, but, you know, I wouldn't be mad to get a, you know,
wow,
a hat.
Stuck with it.
Yeah.
Heracles fans, hit this man up. Get him some swag. Look, let's talk about the building of your roster. And it's a TAM league now, and we saw Sam Johnson come in for you and strikers in RSL the last couple of years. It's been a lot of misses. There's been some guys that just didn't work out. He's working out right now.
A lot.
A couple.
A couple is fair, too.
A couple. All right, a couple. But this looks like a hit. How did you scout him? What did you learn in this, like, pursuit of the right guy?
Well, what we learned is it takes a little more research to get that position right. You know, it's also the number one position shopped in the world, right? A striker scores goals, they're hot. We just saw a young man score 9 in a U20 game. So, I mean, you know, he's going to be the hot commodity over there. But what we learned in the process is we did our research, but not every player fits. You know, one thing people forget about Jura is Jura had 9 goals and I think 7 assists when we had him on loan. We signed him. We made a coaching change, system change. Things didn't work out. That one, you know, we brought him over on loan. Everything went perfect. We gave him a contract. Things changed within the club. And I know it's the first time it's ever happened in sports that a coaching change caused a performance change, but I mean, it's mind blowing, right?
Weird circumstance.
It's weird,
circumstance,
right?
Matters.
That doesn't happen at Heracles.
Yeah, it doesn't happen at Heracles, but you know, with me, no. But then with Ortuño, we did all the research. We flew over, we interviewed him, we sat with him multiple times. We actually sat with his family at one point, and it just didn't work. It was the assimilation into the American culture and into Salt Lake that it just didn't work. And the guy was a great person. He had scored goals before. But he didn't come in and fit in the locker room and all those boxes that have to be ticked. So, you know, with Sam, we were much more conservative, took much more time, and it was also fitting more into the system than into the character and personality. We wanted someone that could come in and fit in the culture. So that was the research. I usually am not drawn to players that have been in as many clubs as he had. Prior to coming here, I like loyalty in player, and I like looking at a resume of a player and seeing 2 clubs, maybe 3 clubs. But with Sam, it was important when I contacted all those clubs, like, how did he fit in the locker room? And that's been a big piece. Now, there are still learning curves, as has been...
We've certainly discussed that one. Yep.
And there's certain things, but you take care of those. You deal with them as needed, and it's fun. You know, on my side of the game, we deal with things very quickly. You know, Mike deals with things very quickly. And by the time the story hits the web, it's kind of done for us. We have to revisit it like 19 times, but it's already been buried. And so there's a learning curve there. But with Sam, you know, it was about the fit in the system and going away from a traditional nine of hold up guy and getting someone that could exploit space behind so we could try and expose the wingers, get them isolated more often, as well as open up space underneath for Demir and Albert to operate in.
Scoring goals, that's good. But there's some more
news. Oh, yeah, there's that part.
There's some news out there.
Yeah. Zhao Plata, is that a guy? We're hearing rumors that he might be headed to Liga MX.
There's conversations. I mean, honestly, I've had conversations with clubs about Joao for 2 or 3 years now. And Joao and I have had a great relationship since I got here as a coach. He's always dreamed of playing in Liga MX. So it's something that we want to be open to. His service at the club over the years, I think it's 6, 7 years now, is he's done a great job. If that opportunity comes up to fulfill that dream and it makes sense for the club, yeah, we could easily at this point look to do that. With the youth that's come in 2 years ago, does that make sense? Probably not. Not with all our homegrown wingers being 19 years old, 18 years old with no games. But now as we have guys maturing, Corey Baird and Bofo, and you know, you have Savarino out there and you have Brooks Lennon who can play up there. I mean, the list goes on for us. We're thankful for that, all the effort we put into the young guys. But now we're at a point as a club that selling a player has to become part of our model. It has to be part of our identity, and we have to learn that it's okay. It's okay to sell a player, especially if it's part of their dream and it makes sense for the club. So there's rumors out there. There's conversations that have happened, as have the last couple of years with Joao, but he's still with us. You know, he played last night, and that's kind of how it's gone the last couple of years. This one, I think, has some traction, you know, to add to the rumor mill and let people kind of run with it out there. There's some traction, but it's not done.
Yeah.
And until it's done, he's a part of our team. And as you saw last night, we're not afraid to play him.
U20 World Cup is I think it's already started, maybe, looking at the clock here.
Yeah.
Sebastian Soto got a couple goals. Richie Ledesma.
Yeah.
Talk about this new model, this new league. Yes, it's TAM. Yes, it's DPs, but it's academy players. And you guys do that as well or better than just about anybody in this league. Those two guys came out of your system.
Yeah.
Can you kind of tell us why they're not still there? And does it hurt you a little bit? Because they're great talents.
Does it hurt? It actually doesn't hurt. I was happy for Soto to score the goals the other day, and hopefully he gets two more today. I mean, we need him. But, you know, when players have the ability to sign for us, which they did, but then they have the choice to go over to a Bundesliga team, I can't really get upset. You know, yes, did we want to sign him? Of course we did. I mean, we wanted those guys in our system. That's why we offered contracts. But when the likes of, you know, Taylor Booth having the opportunity to go to Bayern Munich and Richie to go to Eindhoven and PSV and for Soto to go over to Bundesliga, it's like, can I really be upset about that? I don't think so. Because if Bayern Munich called me and wanted me to go be the technical director, like, listen, I love it here. I've been a part of this league for 20 some odd years now, but peace fingers, man. Like, that's an opportunity you don't pass up. So
for sure,
I'm happy for those guys. The big thing for us as a club is managing that relationship now. So going over and seeing them and making sure we stay in contact with the family. So if and when they do come home, they want to be a part of our club. They don't come back and go, no, you know, it was a bad relationship, I want out. That's the big thing now. Now, as we move forward, and you see it already, as you start to sign these guys younger and younger. I mean, these guys made it to 18 years old because the structure of our league, that's where we were. But the growth of our league is not to sign the 18-year-olds necessarily. It's to sign them at 16 and start playing them in pro games. So, you know, we had some guys, Eric Holt, who started for us last night, Tate Schmidt, who started a couple games that went to college that we just signed this year to homegrown deals as well. So we're not afraid of the system itself, but I think everyone's starting to sign players younger, and I I'm a huge advocate of education. Huge advocate. I mean, I graduated from University of Washington. Shout out.
I knew you were going to take it.
You knew I was going to get it in.
I knew that.
Because I do it on the draft floor every day. On the draft floor every year.
It's something in the Pac-10 water.
I get it on the draft floor every year, and then I had to get it in here. But no, that's where we're going as a league. You know, we're signing guys younger. That education piece is still important. So as a league, that's a focus for us with the SNHU. And, you know, it's a big piece of American culture. We have to make sure to continue to educate these kids, but we also need them to become pros earlier.
2 minutes left with you, Craig. Of course, you're too interesting to get into the mailbag with. I had just a hypothetical that I was curious what you might think about. Portland Timbers have 12 games on the road to start the year. It sounds really hard. You get four wins. They're feeling pretty good about themselves. If I gave you the opportunity to start every year with 12 games on the road, knowing you would get a backloaded home schedule, would you be tempted to take that opportunity?
Not at my club. not with our setup. I mean, we're a youth-driven organization with veteran leadership guiding that youth. I think 12 games on the road, you know, it's going to take a club like mine with a philosophy like ours, with an identity of youth development, spend 12 games on the road to come home. It'd take us 6-7 home games to get those young guys back focused on what it means to be home. So from a development standpoint, no, I think I'd pass.
Boom.
Hard pass.
That's
hard pass.
Really interesting.
That was a great answer.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
It was a setup.
Hadn't thought about
it. I fed that question.
You have Chara, you have Valeri, you have Sebastian Blanco. You have a team that's been together. It makes sense. They just went to MLS Cup.
Absolutely.
They could find a way through. Last one before you let you go. Nate Monoaha, one of the most interesting moments of the year is when Zlatan barged in, all the threats and stuff. You strike me as a guy back in your day who may or may not have said some things on the field to other players. What'd you make of that?
I always felt whatever happened on the field was okay. You know, when I crossed the line, the sideline, I turned into a little bit of a beast, I think, when I played. But as soon as I came off, you know, I had a general understanding. You shake hands whether you win or lose, and that's the way the game goes. You can be upset, but I don't think, personally, I don't think anyone walks into a locker room to apologize. I've stood outside of locker rooms and asked for players to come out to apologize to, Josh Wolf being one of those at one point. But I don't know in my experience if I've ever seen a player barge into another team's locker room to say sorry.
Nobody's ever barged into our studio to say sorry.
I would imagine you guys don't get a lot of that either.
No, we don't. Craig, it's never enough time with you, man. We wish we had more. That's the end of Extra Time driven by Continental. Thanks to Susanna, to Dave, Craig, myself. I'm Andrew Wiebe. I guess I can't thank myself here. But, you know, I appreciate all of
you've
you.
Done it before.
Let us know if you think. 401-206-0MLS, extratime@mlssoccer.com. We promise a big mailbag on Monday with Doyle. And we hope Kalen, if he still works here, TBD on that one. I'm really not sure about that.
That was the question I was going to ask back to you guys.
Yeah, where's Kalen?
Yeah.
We have no idea.
No idea.
No idea.
Carmen San Diego.
We'll see you on Monday. Have a good weekend, everybody. We'll be right back.